Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your websites, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
All right, everyone. Welcome into this week's edition of Readin', Writin', and Reason with Dom Giordano, Dan at the controls. And this week we have a best of the biggest people we've had over the last couple of years that we've been doing this radio hour and podcast on all these issues affecting education, parents, and the like. But first, I wanted to give you, before we bring Riley Gaines and Gordon Chang and people like that on to talk TikTok, wanted to give you the reason for this podcast as I see it. The issue of parental rights has broken loose. The election where Youngkin, thank God, beat Terry McAuliffe in Virginia because Terry McAuliffe just didn't get it. When he kept on talking about, hey, these educators are experts, we'll tell you what to do with your kids, and Youngkin slid in there with parental rights, Republicans should do more of this on the national level, because the other side is the captive of the NEA, NJEA, Randy Weingarten, and the AFT. Of course, the mantra of this show, parental rights, at school board meetings, what's going on with your kids, it ought to be transparent, it ought to be online. You are your first and best teacher, and with all the best intentions of any teacher, and I've taught for a gazillion years, they can't have the same intensity, knowledge, and drive toward your children that you do. It should be obvious. Why do we go down this path? What are we afraid of? Oh, these parents, they don't know anything. They don't know about curriculum. They don't know about all these things. So the show has been instituted to highlight, many times this comes up, but it's also here to give you information that you don't get anywhere else in the mainstream media about what's going on in education, insights, guests, the funding of it, the controversies involved, the curriculum, any number of those things. We have a contact base and knowledge base, I would argue, that is second to none. So that's what you hear each week, and you can always find on podcasts, too, wherever you get your podcast. Let other people know about it, because this, how much has this come up with the school board issues, the transgendered issues, the North Penn School District in the news right now around that issue of one child bashing the other over the head, kids having to sit there and see blood being mopped up, and all the other incidents that have happened. It's right here in our backyard. And it's going to continue because, sadly, there is a conflict here between parents and teachers' unions. And one of the biggest areas of conflict, the biggest that summarizes it, you're going to see play out in Pennsylvania with national attention in the month of June, is school choice. How many years have we talked about this? Why can't parents make that decision? Well, some in the education field would say they can't make that decision because they're not an expert. They don't know enough about it. We are the experts, your public schools. Look, if you want to send your kid to a public school, there could be a million reasons why. Knock yourself out. Do that. There might be some good public schools. I might even agree in many neighborhoods, in the suburbs, etc. And Philadelphia's had some fine public schools, but that's back in the day. Many of them now, you can just take a look at test scores, among other things. They don't pass muster. So why not let parents go to a charter school that has to remain in existence by doing what? By catering to the needs of the parents, the customers, and the kids. Why not let them have school choice and go to a private school? The Catholic schools do remarkably well, but there's a million options out there. We know the reasons. The schools this show stands for are for the kids and the parents, not for the teachers and teachers union. That doesn't mean we don't support and celebrate great teachers across the board. It's this unionization part, overkill, of some of these outfits and how political they are, like Randy Weingarten and what happened during COVID. That's what we don't support. So that mantra will continue. One of our favorites, though, we have coming up, Riley Gaines, is just the all-timer of somebody who was in the right place at the right time, the woman for the moment. She has a new book out about her experiences swimming against Leah Thomas, common sense, what she says around transgender issues, but a whole variety of issues. She joined me on the Noon to 3 show just in the last few days. We'll play that coming up. And as I said, somebody who is under unimaginable attack, who's just a great young woman who is a voice for what we say we value, females, particularly females in sports and keeping female sports that way. Riley Gaines is next here on Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano. I'm gonna teach ya. Hey, welcome back to Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano. Dan at the controls. Riley Gaines, of course, is one of our favorites. She joined me just this past week to talk about her current book that's right in the center of all kinds of controversies. Here's what Riley Gaines told me. Riley, congratulations. How far in the future is dental school at this point? We need some cavities filled here.
Well, let me tell you, I kind of joke, but it honestly feels... So I was in school to be an endodontist, weirdly enough, which is root canal, and it honestly feels like I'm still getting to the root of trouble coming out of people.
Ouch!
So I think yes. I'm still... And it's not really just painful.
Yeah, well, the
I'll
book...
I'll tell you, now I can't imagine going back to school. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, after all this, and again, it's not just the transgender, the female sports, it's the whole idea of the common sense sort of stuff. I wanted to ask you, I think since the last time we talked, too, you were on with Gutfeld, so you were doing comedy, and I know that can be tricky, and you were on with Joe Rogan. What can you tell us
That's
about
right.
those two? Yeah.
Well, it's a totally different setting, and it was hard for me at first because, honestly, I take what I do very seriously. Like, I don't take light to the fact that what we're dealing with, you know, the severity and the harm that it's causing. But I've grown to – I've reached a point where I feel like you almost have to mock what is already a mockery. Because what we're living through as it pertains to the gender ideology movement, especially sports, I mean, it feels like a big SNL skit. Like, I think there actually are SNL skits that are like this, and those are meant to be objectively funny. And so I feel like shine light on the insanity of what we're dealing with, and I think we can do that through comedy. And so Gutfeld's awesome. I'm going to be on Gutfeld tonight. Make sure you are tuning
okay.
in. Joe Rogan, I've been on Bill Maher's podcast and show now, which he's certainly a character. And so, but that's more me and my everyday life. You know, I'm a very lighthearted, fun, energetic person. And so it's nice to be able to kind of tap into that side of me as a person as well.
Well, I think Bill Maher is in agreement with you, not on everything, of course, but on this. And to your point about comedy, he's one of the biggest forces to mock this push.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
back against it. So tell me, in the book, what's the favorite thing that you got to write about, got to explore swimming against the current?
Well, the book was a nice outlet for me to be able to extend beyond just the headlines, right? Because you look at, obviously, we know our media is biased. And I think that certainly goes both sides, but most of the media is left leaning, and most of the headlines would describe me as an anti-trans swimmer who wants to ban trans athletes. My book makes it very clear my stance. I am not against, I mean, the position that I've taken these past 2 years, I'm not standing against anything. I'm not saying that trans athletes shouldn't compete, or that trans people or people who identify as trans or who struggle with gender exist. Of course not. But what I am saying is that safety and fairness should be prioritized over inclusion. Everyone should compete, just compete in the category that's safe and fair. How is that overly controversial? I'm still trying to figure that out. So it was just nice to be able to go in depth into that national championships, into the silencing that we face, the locker room aspect, the trajectory of where we're going, the broader picture of this, why this matters, and what we as everyday people can do about it.
Yeah, and a couple of things there. I'll get to what it takes to put on your swimsuit when you compete at the level that you did. But, you know, some of these people I hear, not just their ideology, they don't understand what makes a champion. They don't understand competition. They don't understand how intense you were. Maybe swimming next to almost anything because of its tenth of a second here and there. What you did in training and the natural advantage of Leah Thomas. I mean, some of these people just don't get what sports has done for me, for you, but principally over the last 20 years for females. At the highest levels, to experience that, it is beyond. I've never experienced it. You are at a level that I will not know. And how could you diminish or dismiss that by just allowing people with an advantage to be into that?
It's such a good point you make, because truly, most of the people, I would say 90% of the people who are championing males being able to infiltrate into our spaces, infiltrate into our sports, are people who have never played a sport in their entire lives or don't have a daughter. I think back to a few weeks ago, it was in the California State House, Representative Scott Wiener, which of course that's his last name. he was sitting on the House floor. It was actually on trans visibility, whatever day, made up day, fictional holiday they made up. But he's standing on the House floor, and he starts sharing the account of that national championships and saying that I'm acting out of a place of fear of trans people and that hatred and all the things. And so I commented back to him, and I said, you know, it's always the people who have never played sport in their entire lives. And he commented back. It was so funny on Twitter. And he said, clearly you've never heard of the Gay Kickball League. To which I commented back again. Let's correct myself. It's always the people who have never sport in their entire lives.
Wait a minute. This guy's holding up the competitive swimming that is beyond unimaginable to the Gay Kickball League. Oh, my God. So, Riley.
Pretty comparable, right?
Yeah. So, Riley, you know, with the Olympics coming up, I don't know. How are the Olympic regulations at this point? It seemed like they were moving toward the position of trying to greatly curtail somebody winning here, someone beating truly biologically female athletes. Do you have a sense that that's changed with the Olympics, at least?
So the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, as you can imagine, are just as cowardly as the next guy, like the NCAA. So the position that the NCAA and the IOC has now taken is basically admittance that they know this is wrong. They're saying they used to have a blanket policy in place, but now they're saying, well, we're just going to leave it up to each specific sport governing body to make its own rules. But here is our framework. And you know what the framework of the International Olympic Committee says? It says that you cannot presume that males possess any advantage over females. They say that's actually unverified, alleged, and perceived. Those are the three words they use. And they say, until we can prove there is data and evidence that males on average, are advantageous over females in sports, then we cannot discriminate on the basis of transgender status. That is what the Olympics says. They say there is no difference between males and females whatsoever. And if you disagree or if you even dare to question this, then you're the bigot.
Wow. Riley, the book out today, Swimming Against the Current, available all over the place. What else in the book, in addition to what we've been talking about, what else did we learn about Riley Gaines, or what else do you emphasize in your book?
It's I speak to my background a little bit, my family. I'm so fortunate to have such a wonderful family. I've got, you know, I come from a family of athletes. My dad, he was an NFL player. He actually played with the Eagles.
Well, wait, wait, we got to underline this. So what's his first name? What's his first name?
Brad. Brad Gaines.
Okay.
It's pretty unique. He played, of course, in the SEC.
Yep.
Entirely biased, and the SEC is the best conference. I said it. My dad, he was an SEC Hall of Famer. His story is pretty unique in the way that when he was in college, he was playing a game against Ole Miss. My dad played at Vanderbilt. Long pass thrown to my dad. My dad catches the ball. The Ole Miss player by the name of Chucky Mullins ends up tackling my dad, but the way he tackled, he ended up breaking his neck and ultimately passing away. And so, but it's wild because ESPN has covered the story of my dad and Chucky for forever. They have documentaries in SEC, stories in 30 for 30s, and ever since I started speaking out, they've taken it off their rotation, which is wild. So anyways, all that to say, my upbringing, my family, my faith, which is foundational in my life, it's the center of everything that I do. And like I said, just what we can do. I think it's a guide more so. It's something that I wish I had when I was faced with this, when I didn't know what resources did. I didn't the support that was out there. Now I certainly do. I have met so many amazing people who are standing right alongside me in spite. And that's what this book is.
Yeah. Well, and also the inspiration, Scanlon, when I've had her on a couple times, each time that she's on, she gets better. She was nervous in the beginning, but has grown into that. And there's thousands, you probably hear this, little girls across the country that are seeing this, modeling it. And I'm still convinced, Riley, even though it's a little bit slow at times, this is the low-hanging fruit on all this transgender stuff where reasonable people say, no way are we going to penalize females. So congratulations, Riley. We love all the work that you do. Hope to meet you in person at some point if you're coming through Philadelphia. Are you coming through Philadelphia?
Well, we love you guys. So thank you for everything that you guys do. Thanks for continually having me on and continuing to shed light on the insanity. And I'm just grateful for you guys. So thank you.
All right. That's Riley Gaines, one of our favorites, and somebody who is really making her mark. You're going to see her run for office and other things at some point, and we're proud to have her on the show. Coming up, we often hear about training for school boards and the like, and they're often seen as very progressive. We have a woman who is training people for school boards and running for school board and all that, that is a bit more conservative. She joins us next here on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
I'm gonna teach you.
Hey, welcome back in, everyone, to Reading, Writing, and Reason. You know, there have been school boards have been the battleground of getting people elected, but what after they're elected happens? Well, often the training they go to, I've seen it myself, is more status quo or even progressive. We were joined recently by Christina Brusalis, who is leading the Pennsylvania School Directors Coalition. I'm not saying they're just wholly conservative. I'd say they're anti-status quo. So once people are elected in there, they have better information. Here's what Christina told me about her group and what they hope to do. Christina, thanks for joining us. And what's your idea? Aren't there already school board coalitions out there?
Well, there's certainly a lot of opportunities for school directors when they're elected or appointed. We have a few appointed school directors across the Commonwealth to plug into a network or a coalition or an association of school directors, or even there are a bunch of outside groups that offer things for school directors to get information. And we decided to launch the Pennsylvania School Directors Coalition, one, because we thought it was really important to have a Pennsylvania state organization, state-specific organization. But essentially, the reason we did it was because we felt that there needed to be an organization to support school directors in promoting common sense education policies, both locally and statewide, that improve academic achievement and help us to unlock opportunities for all of our children. Quite honestly, Pennsylvania is the state of education in Pennsylvania. We're facing a lot of big challenges. I know that 54% of our students are proficient in English and 39% are proficient in math. And even if you look pre-pandemic, it was only 42% of Pennsylvania kids were proficient in math. So the status quo just isn't working. And so we here at the Pennsylvania School Directors Coalition, we believe that the more voices that we have working on these challenges and opportunities, that the better our students, our children will better off they'll be.
Well, a couple of things. One, reading the interview you did with the Philadelphia Inquirer, I'm glad you went into the lion's den. And the Philadelphia Inquirer is trying to poke at you for now. They'll come at you more later. That's always the greatest recommendation we can give people. They know immediately this group might be dangerous to the status quo, which you just stated. Particularly, I believe, Christina, post-COVID, there was not urgency after the mistakes that were made, and we're even farther behind. But this show is dedicated. One of the major missions is the mission of parental rights. And I see at the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, you referred to the efforts of this other school board directors meeting. They were going to try to establish parent groups. You said, according to the Inquirer, anyhow, we need to plant parents groups that are conservative and fighting for conservative values in every school across the state. I don't know why that was controversial to the Inquirer, but tell me what you're thinking.
Well, I mean, whatever your viewpoint is, if you believe very strongly that there should be a particular initiative or particular if things should be handled in a particular way at your school, then you should be there at our school board meetings. And what better way to do it than in a group of like-minded individuals? I mean, you help each other. It's certainly a lot. I'll tell you, at my school district where I serve, the budget's $100 million. It's a big organization with a lot of moving parts. And
what's your school district, Christine? $100 million bucks? You know, for Philadelphia, they burn that much by lunchtime, as you probably have heard what their school budget is. But what's your school district?
I serve on the Pine Ridgeland School Board, so I will have to say I'm speaking as my individual self and here representing Pennsylvania.
Yes.
School Directors Coalition, because I got in trouble for that before.
Yeah, but $100 million, that is very substantial. Yeah. Well, one of the things...
No, it's big budgets. And we need parents who are there holding us accountable as much as we need school directors who know what their jobs are, what their roles are, and most importantly, what their authority is.
Yes, exactly. And again, this idea of strength in numbers with parents, it can be kind of... As somebody who identifies as a conservative and with this group, does your school board, what is the reason why, and again, this is what I do all day, talk radio, I assume it would be similar to a school board meeting. I think some of the tension would go away if there were opportunities each time at the school board meeting for the school board director, whoever it is that's addressed, to make some comment back to the parent. Now, maybe the parent can't ask questions and get an answer every single month. Maybe once or twice a year they get that. But, Christina, this notion that we saw develop in our area, they actually had a clock with tenths of seconds up there counting down as the parent once a month is making a statement for about 90 seconds to 2 minutes. There's no interaction.
people feel like they're not talking to anybody.
Yeah, that's a tough one, I think, to figure out, because you've got two perspectives there.
Yeah.
And being on the other, I've been on both sides of that. I've been the parent who shows up at those meetings.
Right.
And now I'm at the dais as a school board member. And, you know, we want to hear from the community. And I think it's important to hear from the community. And we want you to keep coming back and telling us what we're doing well, what we're not doing well, where we you know, new things that we need to think about. But it is hard when you get in that room. And, you know, we have had meetings, actually just had one Monday. We were there until 11:30 at night.
Wow.
We want to give everyone as much opportunity as we can to speak. And often if there's time and it's not too late, you can come up and speak again if your 3 minutes are up. Most policies save to talk about something else. But I think there's both sides of that. And, you know, if you don't get everything that you want to say in, please write. Make sure that you're heard. We all read the emails and just, you know, the squeaky wheel. Keep showing up.
Okay. Now, the Inquirer says during your tenure, the Pine Ridgeland Board has killed a proposed equity policy, been the site of a debate on library books. Well, that's a star that you're having debate on that. Tell us your thoughts on those two issues and how your organization might be helpful.
Well, what I will say first is, as an elected school director, I think that we have to go out every 4 years and talk to the community. I will tell you, it is not as black and white as the media will want you to believe. I think they'll want you to think that all of those issues are a vast right-wing conspiracy, and they're not. And when you talk to people on both sides of the aisle, which when you knock on doors and you have conversation about it, you start to see that somewhere in the middle, people kind of meet and see each other and understand each other and where they're. And I think those are both issues where if we had conversations about it, one side wouldn't think the other one's terrible and neither the other. So I think it's disappointing, like in the article, where we are automatically just labeled as, you know, I forget the words that she used, but on those issues, for example, on the library books issue, again, I don't think that's a partisan issue. I think almost every school district probably has a library policy. And so we expect our school directors to follow that policy. And we expect the people who are in those roles in the school districts to implement the policies that school boards create. So one, it's important to make sure you have the right people in those seats, and those policies should reflect the community that is sending those school directors there. And then when they're not being followed, that's when it becomes, I think, the biggest issue. And that's why we're here at Pennsylvania School Directors Coalition, because we think school directors need to know what their authority is. And part of that is holding people accountable. And if your superintendent or the building principal, if those policies aren't being followed, school directors need to take action.
I think we hit upon a nugget here, what one of the major things you're up to. You know, the individual school district there, they may be in a district where there are different voices, they're in the minority, and they don't understand any real power or what they can exercise, particularly if it's something that they think is really awry. And this is a group that can show them some of the things out there that might be a little bit more nuanced and advanced. I just always thought, Christine, I don't know about you, it's a good policy. If you're told you can't read that, you're reading out loud some of the books from the school library, that's obscene, you can't read that here, then that might be a clue that maybe middle school kids, maybe that's something to reconsider in the library.
I, from my perspective as a school board member, then yes, the policy should reflect your community. And if the school board, if you can't say that at your public forum, then I think school boards should think about whether that's appropriate or not. And a lot of school boards do. I think strengthening definitions of what is appropriate and isn't is one thing a lot of school boards are considering. But it all goes back to the school board itself and making sure that they can understand, one, what their job is and their role is.
Let me stop you there. What is the position of your group that might differ from others? Or, you know, I don't want to keep on doing the contrast because this is a fresh and good idea. So what is it that is the mission in the view of your coalition, do you think?
Well, I think, and I keep talking about authority, but central to our approach is the belief that school boards have authority and that school boards were never intended to just be rubber stamps for school administrators or teachers. There is an article, and it's about 20 years old now, that has a great quote from the then superintendent of Pittsburgh Public Schools. And in that, the reporter asked the superintendent why he wasn't working to close the school's achievement gap. And his answer was that the school board didn't ask him to make it a priority. And that the superintendent at the time, he said that it wasn't an expectation that ever was given to him. So this, I mean, it just illustrates why I think it's important to make sure that school directors are educated in their authority to set those expectations and to hold people accountable. And we don't mean to have an antagonistic approach with your administrators or with your teachers. We love our teachers. We love the work that our superintendents and our building principals are doing. We want to be partners. But I think in the end, we have to know that we have the power to set those expectations, that we're expected to set them, and that we have the power to set the priorities at the school. And whether those priorities are improving achievement, taking a look at curriculum, these are all within the realm of what we have authority to do. And I don't think that's being communicated to school directors. I can't tell you how many times I've sat in my boardroom and I've had not just community members who, you know, may or may not know the law, but other school directors tell me that I should leave it up to the, you know, why am I asking questions? I'm sending the wrong message to our school administrators because I'm asking questions, and that we should just leave these decisions to the professionals. Well, that's
our job. That's exactly, not to politicize, you're not. I'm just going to make the point that that's exactly what this show is dedicated to, because we saw in Virginia when Youngkin jumped in there with Terry McAuliffe saying, leave it to the experts, to the parents. Well, I agree with what you just said. The school board directors are put in there because they're supposed to have the ability to take a look at anything, not just the finances. They may not have the expertise, but they can ask expert questions of the curriculum deciders. Why are you doing this? What's the theory behind this, etc.? And then I think they have a role there. They're not dictating what someone studied for their life, but they do have a role of asking questions a community would like asked.
Right. And our belief is that Pennsylvania is a big state member, and you know, we want to hear from the community, and I think it's important to hear from the community, and we want you to keep coming back and telling us what we're doing well, what we're not doing well, where we you know, new things that we need to think about. But it is hard when you get in that room, and, you know, we have had meetings, actually just had one Monday. We were there until 11:30 at night. We want to give everyone as much opportunity as we can to speak. And often if there's time and it's not too late, you can come up and speak again if your 3 minutes are up. Most policies say you have to talk about something else. But I think there's both sides of that. And, you know, if you don't get everything that you want to say in, please write. Make sure that you're heard. We all read the emails, and just, you know, the squeaky wheel. Keep showing up.
Okay. Now, the Inquirer says, during your tenure, the Pine Ridgeland Board has killed a proposed equity policy, been the site of a debate on library books. Well, that's a star that you're having debate on that. Tell us your thoughts on those two issues and how your organization might be helpful.
Well, what I will say first is, as an elected school director, I think that we have to go out every 4 years and talk to the community. I will tell you, it is not as black and white as the media will want you to believe. I think they'll want you to think that all of those issues are a vast right-wing conspiracy, and they're not. And when you talk to people on both sides of the aisle, which when you knock on doors and you have conversation about it, you start to see that somewhere in the middle, people kind of meet and see each other and understand each other and where they're. And I think those are both issues where if we had conversations about it, one side wouldn't think the other one's terrible and neither the other. So I think we're just, it's disappointing, like in the article, where we are automatically just labeled as, you know, I forget the words that she used. But on those issues, for example, on the library books issue, again, I don't think that's a partisan issue. I think almost every school district probably has a library policy. And so we expect our school directors to follow that policy, and we expect the people who are in those roles in the school districts to implement the policies that school boards create. So one, it's important to make sure you have the right people in those seats, and those policies should reflect the community that is sending those school directors there. And then when they're not being followed, that's when it becomes, I think, the biggest issue. And that's why we're here at Pennsylvania School Directors Coalition, because we think school directors need to know what their authority is. And part of that is holding people accountable. And if your superintendent or the building principal, if those policies aren't being followed, school directors need to take action.
I think we hit upon a nugget here, what one of the major things you're up to. You know, the individual school district there, they may be in a district where there are different voices, they're in the minority, and they don't understand any real power or what they can exercise, particularly if it's something that they think is really awry. And this is a group that can show them some of the things out there that might be a little bit more nuanced and advanced. I just always thought, Christine, I don't know about you, it's a good policy. If you're told you can't read that, you're reading out loud some of the books from the school library, that's obscene, you can't read that here, then that might be a clue that maybe middle school kids, maybe that's something to reconsider in the library.
I from my perspective as a school board member, then yes, the policy should reflect your community. And if the school board, if you can't say that at your public forum, then I think school boards should think about whether that's appropriate or not. And a lot of school boards do. I think strengthening definitions of what is appropriate and isn't is one thing a lot of school boards are considering. But it all goes back to the school board itself and making sure that they can understand, one, what their job is and their role is.
Let me stop you there. What is the position of your group that might differ from others? Or, I don't want to keep on doing the contrast because this is a fresh and good idea. So what is it that is the mission in the view of your coalition, do you think?
Well, I think, and I keep talking about authority, but central to our approach is the belief that school boards have authority and that school boards were never intended to just be rubber stamps for school administrators or teachers. There is an article, and it's about 20 years old now, that has a great quote from the then superintendent of Pittsburgh Public Schools. And in that, the reporter asked the superintendent why he wasn't working to close the school's achievement gap. And his answer was that the school board didn't ask him to make it a priority. And that the superintendent at the time, he said that it wasn't an expectation that ever was given to him. So this, it just illustrates why I think it's important to make sure that school directors are educated in their authority to set those expectations and to hold people accountable. And we don't mean to have an antagonistic approach with your administrators or with your teachers. We love our teachers. We love the work that our superintendents and our building principals are doing. We want to be partners. But I think in the end, we have to know that we have the power to set those expectations, that we're expected to set them, and that we have the power to to set the priorities at the school. And whether those priorities mm-hmm. are improving achievement, taking a look at curriculum, these are all within the realm of what we have authority to do. And I don't think that's being communicated to school directors. I can't tell you how many times I've sat in my boardroom and I've had not just community members who, you know, may or may not know the law, but other school directors tell me that I should leave it up to the, you know, why am I asking questions? I'm sending the wrong message to our school administrators mm-hmm. because I'm asking questions, and that we should just leave these decisions to the professionals. Well, that's
job. That's exactly, not to politicize. You're not. I'm going to make the point that that's exactly what this show is dedicated to, because we saw in Virginia when Youngkin jumped in there with Terry McAuliffe saying, leave it to the experts, to the parents. Well, I agree with what you just said. The school board directors are put in there because they're supposed to have the ability to take a look at anything, not just the finances. They may not have the expertise, but they can ask expert questions of the curriculum deciders. Why are you doing this? What's the theory behind this, etc.? And then I think they have a role there. They're not dictating what someone studied for their life, but they do have a role of asking questions a community would like asked.
Right. And our belief is that Pennsylvania is a big state. We have a lot of diversity in the state, and the communities that our school boards are representing are so different, and that there's no one-size-fits-all solution, and that if we empower our school directors to understand that they can step in and say, we want to have this kind of improvement or this kind of whatever, that we have the authority to do it. And I think that we can impact our schools, I think, a lot more quickly
and in
a much more meaningful way than if we wait for the state to do it for us.
Not only that, at that level, they're not going to be able to. Now, I think this is a grand idea of exactly the meshing of this authority. You're empowering these people to be engaged with this, and I think parents will like it too. So where do people go if they want to see your group? Do you have a website, Facebook? Where do they go, Christina?
We do. We have PASchooldirectors.com, and we have what we're calling School Board Bootcamp. And I mean it, any school director in the Commonwealth, and we don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, we want you to come here because we have structured our School Board Bootcamp to address like the big buckets of authority and finance and curriculum in evaluating your superintendent, doing a superintendent search, understanding the law, because right where we're bounded by what's state law and what's in federal law. So understanding all of those things so that when you sit in that seat, and even things as basic as parliamentary procedure, I had one school director tell me that he'd served 12 years and had never had a parliamentary procedure training in those 12 years. Like the things that you need to know day one to start serving. So that's our focus right now, is to make sure, we just had elections last year for school boards all across the state, and just making sure that new and veteran school directors have this information to do the good work that they're doing in their school districts.
This is both down to the very roots level, the school board, but also it's got a macro point to it, bringing all these have to have a voice. And that's always seeming to me covering all your bases. So, Christina, thank you. Please keep us informed of things that you're up to, and we'd like to talk again.
Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, as I promised there, this group is going to make an impact. It is much different. It's going to shake up the status quo, put people on a level playing field. Coming up, we often talk in the world of my Noon to 3 show to Gordon Chang, nobody better at warning us about communist China. But he recently was on the show, and Gordon Chang laid out in the great TikTok debate how dangerous TikTok is, particularly with your kids. He's next on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
I'm gonna teach you.
Hey, our final segment this week, a very special best of with Dom Giordano, Reading, Writing, and Reason. Gordon Chang is brilliant when it comes to several books about communist China, the Communist Chinese Party. But he joined us recently as the great TikTok debate emerged. Remember that? It's going to come back, about making it an American company. He solidly believes that should happen.
with great knowledge. Here's what Gordon Chang told me. Gordon, good afternoon. Welcome in. And I guess at this point in time, are you optimistic? Are you happy about this? We have Kellyanne Conway, Rand Paul, some others still opposed to this.
Well, I'm happy that it got such broad support in committee in Congress. I hope that it gets through the House, hope it gets through the Senate, and President Biden said that he would sign the TikTok bill. Now, of course, Biden doesn't need a bill to do this. He can just use his emergency powers. He has the International Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977, for instance. This is the act that President Trump used in his last months to ban TikTok, WeChat, and other Chinese apps. So at least we're moving in the right direction. And I am a little bit dismayed that we have people, especially in the Republican Party, who aren't very happy about banning TikTok. But I think that we'll go forward.
Well, the first area, and then we'll talk about the geopolitical, Gordon, kind of meshing the two here. My background before doing this, I think, was in education, teaching, et cetera. The softening up of America, the sheer number of kids doing nutty things constantly coming out of TikTok is amazing to me. I mean, it's proof positive of what they're up to, what this is about.
Yeah, there are about 170 million users who've downloaded the app on their devices in America. And they do some nutty things, as you say, funny dances. But I worry about some of the more sinister things that are being promoted on TikTok, like self-harm, suicide, illegal drug use. And, of course, China propagates its narratives. So there's a lot of propaganda and disinformation. And it's not only supporting what China wants, but also Russia's war efforts in Ukraine. And because of that, I think that we see support for a lot of China's foreign policy initiatives that we ordinarily wouldn't see, but for apps like TikTok.
So a couple of things go ahead, Dan. You can.
Bring it locally to Philadelphia. Yeah. I mean, one of the trends we saw, Gordon, on TikTok was something called the Kia Boys, which essentially gave a step-by-step instruction as to how to hotwire a Kia or Hyundai vehicle and was a direct contributor to the crazy amount of auto theft we've seen here in Philadelphia. It's just a trend that spread around TikTok showing kids how to do it, and they wanted to show their friends that they could do it just like they saw on TikTok.
Yes, and the curation algorithm of TikTok is really important. That's the algorithm that determines what your kids see and what they don't see. It is perhaps the most commercially sophisticated algorithm of its type in the world, and China uses it to promote certain behaviors, and I guess stealing Kias in the Philadelphia area is one of them. And we got to realize that they're trying to destroy American society. And so I find it very distressing that we have people actually in both parties who have been resistant to a ban of TikTok, or at least a forced sale to an American party. And we also got to do more than just force a sale. That only solves the issue of data theft. The other issue is the algorithm, and we got to make sure that whoever owns TikTok in the U.S. also gets control of the algorithm.
Well, how does this work then? How does China get these influencers that make videos, come up with suggestions? Are these people just out there and then, Gordon, they pluck them? Are they in conspiracy with them? Do they have an array with influencers that would have kids doing things that are diminishing at best?
I suspect that China does have some direct contact with some influencers, but they don't need to. All they need to do is to take a trend that they like. So, for instance, promotion of self-harm. And they boosted the signal, as they say, through TikTok so that it gets distributed widely on that platform. So they don't need to actually have a direct link with an influencer. All they have to do is take a trend that they promote and actually just use the algorithm.
Gordon, a lot of people college age, and this is the thing. Look, younger kids, or I don't know who the audience would be, but you would think at the college level they wouldn't be getting so much information from TikTok. I'm talking about Gaza and some of the anti-Semitism coming toward Jews in Israel. And a lot of that seems to be because they get their information through TikTok.
Yes, and you know, it is distressing that someone who's reached college would be influenced by that. But, you know, we are. We're humans. And even with education, or maybe because of education, you know, we are susceptible to all sorts of narratives on platforms like this. And, you know, we just got to recognize that harm. And we got to recognize the national security threat and do something about it. And it doesn't help that President Biden's reelection campaign, Biden HQ, actually joined the platform and during the Super Bowl, you know, promoted a video. So really, we've got a very, very important problem that starts at the top.
Geopolitically, well, Gordon, let's talk about your new book here. This is just out. China is going to war. How imminent is that? We know they take the long view. What's your sense of that? And would that mean Taiwan? Is that what you're getting to?
Could be Taiwan, but, you know, it could be the Philippines, Tom. You know,
the Philippines.
On March 5, the State Department actually issued a warning that the United States was prepared to use force against China to discharge our obligations under Article 4 of our mutual defense treaty with the Philippines, because China has been engaged in some very belligerent activity at Second Thomas Shoal in the South China Sea. So it could be Taiwan, or it could be the Philippines, could be Japan, could be India. And we know of its activities against countries like Bhutan, and of course the dangerous air and naval intercepts in international airspace and water. So it could be anything. But we see a regime that it talks about war all the time, that is fast preparing for it. And we have to ask ourselves just one question. How many times in history has a militant regime that is fast prepared for war not started one?
I would ask you, because you're the guy for me, Gordon, what is our leverage over them? I mean, sometimes I hear politicians to cheer the American public up, Biden's one of them, say, I don't listen to any of that. You know, they're yesterday's news versus us. I don't believe that. I see how dangerous they are. But what leverage do we have?
We have leverage over, for instance, their exports. Right now, the Chinese economy is in really bad shape. And basically what they've done is they've abandoned a core sector property. And they did that a couple days ago. Their only way out is to export goods to the rest of the world. Well, they need our market more than they have ever. And we could deny it to them. And I think that we need to do that, because we should not be enriching a regime that uses the proceeds of trade and investment to build up a military which is configured to kill Americans. It's just as simple as that. It is morally wrong. It is strategically wrong. And history is going to look at us and say, why the hell did you ever think it was a good idea to build up the Chinese military? And I think that we're going to be held like the British and the French in the late 1930s, who could have stopped World War II in Europe from ever starting, but chose to take the easy path, which led to that horrible conflict on the continent.
Gordon, thank you so much. It's always such a pleasure to really get insight on this. The current book, China is Going to War. Is there a website? I'm sure it's available in any bookstore or online, Amazon, etc.
Yeah, and also people can follow me on X, formerly Twitter, at Gordon G. Chang.
Thank you, Gordon. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, I'm really glad to end with Gordon Chang this week, because as I said, his knowledge base on the Communist Chinese Party and Communist China and the insidious nature of TikTok. Of course, this ought to become an American company. Not banned, but an American company. We'll have more next week here. Have a great week, and join us each week on Reading, Writing, and Reason. Tell people about it. Tell them that wherever they get their podcasts, they'll find us here on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
You need a lesson, gonna bring it to you now.